Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So continuing today from Canto 7, Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. This is text 24. Kripaya bhuta jam dukham daivam jahyat samadhina atmajam yoga viryena nidram sattva nishevaya kripaya bhuta jam dukham daivam jahyat samadhina atmajam yoga viryena nidram sattva nishevaya. Prabhuji's kripaya bhuta jam dukham daivam jahyat samadhina atmajam yoga viryena nidram sattva nishevaya. Kripaya bhuta jam dukham daivam jahyat samadhina atmajam yoga viryena nidram sattva nishevaya. Matajis? Do you want? Kripaya bhuta jam dukham daivam jahyat samadhina atmajam yoga viryena nidram sattva nishevaya. Kripaya bhuta jam dukham daivam jahyat samadhina atmajam yoga viryena nidram sattva nishevaya. So let's go through the word for word. Kripaya, by being merciful to all other living entities. Bhutajam, because of other living entities. Dukam, suffering. Daivam, suffering imposed by providence. Jahyat, one should give up. Samadhina, by trance or meditation. Atmajam, sufferings due to the body and mind. Yoga viryena, by practicing hatha yoga, pranayam, and so forth. Nidram, sleeping. Sattva nishevaya, by developing brahminical qualifications or the mode of goodness. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation and trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing hatha yoga, pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Oh, I'm sorry, we go through the translation. Please repeat after me. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation in trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing Hatha Yoga, Pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. Purport, by practice, one should avoid eating in such a way that other living entities will be disturbed and suffer. Since I suffer when pinched or killed by others, I should not attempt to pinch or kill any other living entity. People do not know that because of killing innocent animals, they themselves will have to suffer severe reactions from material nature. Any country where people indulge in unnecessary killing of animals will have to suffer from wars and pestilence imposed by material nature. Comparing one's own suffering to the suffering of others, therefore, one should be kind to all living entities. One cannot avoid the sufferings inflicted by providence, and therefore when suffering comes, one should fully absorb oneself in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. One can avoid sufferings from the body and mind by practicing mystic Hatha Yoga. Om Agyanthimidandhasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshudunmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gudau Shri Utapadakamalam Shri Gudun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Dhupam Sagrajatam Sahagnaganatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvayetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Dev Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalata Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Kuruna Sandho Dinabandhu Jagatmate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tata Kanchana Gaurangi Dadhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Site Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpadadubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pavanityananda Shidvaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gauda Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So last time when His Holiness Radhanath Swami was here, he and Svas Prabhu and myself were sitting in the sannyas quarters, and the Prabhus were discussing, and I was just kind of sitting and listening, trying to stay out of the way. And Maharaj was mentioning that for the neophyte devotee, those who are absorbed in the bodily platform of life, the struggle for existence, it preoccupies the mind so much. It's such a intense absorption, just struggling to exist and deal with suffering, that it's very difficult on top of that to then struggle in Krishna consciousness, you know, to then actually practice Krishna consciousness very seriously. And then, of course, he turned to me and said, you know, he's talking about the neophyte, and he turned to me and said, isn't that right, Sri Satchinandana? So I felt a little bit like, yes, it is, Maharaj. So here we see the Bhagavatam is very nicely describing how we can actually deal with these various sufferings, how we can deal with these problems of material nature in a way that is wise, in a way that includes an understanding of how material nature works. It's a manual written by the person who created material nature, right? And it's given to us in a way that we can utilize this knowledge so that we can actually make progress on with the purpose of human life, which is to go back to Godhead, to attain Krishna consciousness. So these are very wise instructions given in this section, and we should take full advantage of them. And so Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, Dukalayam Ashashvatam, that this material world is a place of suffering. It's actually built within material nature. It's part of the fabric of this material reality. You can't avoid it. It's there, right? You can try to adjust material nature as much as you like. You can't escape it. Just like, for example, you try to build a shelter out of material nature to get away from the suffering. That shelter itself is also a source of suffering, because the suffering is within material nature. Krishna describes that there are, or the scriptures describe that there's three different categories of suffering. There's the adibhutik, which is the suffering caused by other living entities. There's adidaivik, which is basically the suffering, these traumatic experiences of devastation that come by nature, through providence, as Prabhupada says here. And then there's adiatmik, the suffering that's constantly there with our own body and mind. So the living entity is always being tortured by these various kinds of suffering. So there's different, what do we do about this? You know, there's different ways to deal with this. On one level, as being described here, you know, there are practical things that you can do to try to deal with the suffering and to create as much of an ideal situation as possible. This pity on nature will never be perfect, but you can try, you know, as best you can to alleviate some of the problems. But really, the higher practice is to try to adjust your consciousness, to try to adjust your perspective of these various sufferings, to raise our consciousness and Krishna consciousness, and then perceive reality from a different perspective. That's the best way of dealing with this suffering of material nature. Does that make sense? So in this particular verse, Narada Muni is describing both of these techniques. He's describing how to practically deal with some of these issues, but he's also describing how to raise our consciousness so that we see them from a higher perspective. Okay? So let's go through the verse, and we'll look, and also, you know, in conjunction with Prabhupada's purport, we'll look at these various things. These three types of klesha are described here, beginning with the suffering caused by other living entities. So it says, kripaya bhutajam dukham. So we can counteract the suffering caused by other living entities by being merciful, by having kripa. Prabhupada defines kripa in three ways in this verse and purport. Excuse me. It's basically, Prabhupada refers to it as good behavior. Sorry about that. He refers to it as good behavior. He also refers to it as being merciful. And he also refers to it as giving up envy of others. So these are really all the same thing. Good behavior, being a sadhu, means to have kripa, to be merciful. And being merciful really means to look past the problems and the suffering that others are giving you, to tolerate that suffering, to tolerate the kicks, the slings of outrageous fortune, right? And to try to, instead of reciprocating that, to actually give mercy and kindness and compassion. Does that make sense? Not to be envious of others, not to dislike or hate or have some negative feeling to others, even if they're causing you suffering, but rather to be kind and generous and to try to help them in return. Does that make sense? It's not a very easy consciousness to attain, right? But if we want to be able to deal with the suffering in this material world caused by other living entities, we have to raise ourselves to that perspective of reality. You can't stop the suffering caused by other living entities. It's going to be there, right? We experience that every situation in this material world, even if you're in the body of an ant, all the way into the body of a human being, it doesn't matter. All living entities are causing each other suffering. In the animal kingdom, they're fighting to try to devour each other, right? And here in the human form of life, you know, it's a little bit more polished, just like this gross body. And sorry if this sounds kind of gory, but if we take off the skin, you'll see it's actually a very ugly thing. You know, it's nothing but bones and skin and blood and flesh, right? So similarly, if you strip away the skin of human interaction, especially in Kali Yuga, you see the bare, ugly bones of selfishness, cruelty, right? Nasty. It's very ugly. And those of us who have been around for a little bit, we know that. We have very practical experience of that. That the relationships are actually a very disturbing thing. So the tendency sometimes is to want to just withdraw, to want to just escape or to get away from all other living entities, right? You know, like this gyan tendency, and to just pull into ourselves and try to somehow just hide under the radar, right? We could see this even sometimes in devotional communities. You know, the tendency is that we after a while, you want to just keep to yourself, you know? But really, what we need to do is move past this particular impediment and try to actually be able to tolerate the various misery and suffering caused by others, tolerate the ugliness, tolerate the difficulties, and try to instead give compassion and mercy to others. Does that make sense? To actually be willing to reach beyond that, in other words, to be willing to absorb or to tolerate and forgive those types of those experiences of misery and ugliness, and to actually be willing to help others, especially by giving them Krishna consciousness. And in order to preach Krishna consciousness, either individually or collectively, we have to do that. We have to be willing to deal with all the ugliness. We have to be willing to deal with the nastiness of people's conditioning, basically, and to reciprocate by working for their benefit, despite all the difficulties. We see Prabhupada did this in a very, very high level, right? And so this is something people notice too. Like I've experienced just going different places, walking around. Sometimes you meet people on the street, and they tell you, and sometimes karmis, they're very blunt. You know, they'll just tell you straight up, you know, this is what's wrong with you, right? Like I've had people say to me on at least two or three occasions that, you're in that temple on over by Brahman Hospital. And, yeah, that's us. And, you know, you guys, you're real cold and hard and mean, you know. You're not very welcoming, you know. Like, what's wrong with you guys, you know? Aren't you supposed to be, like, religious and spiritual? You know, and he's got a good point, and I can't argue with him, right? So the tendency is that when you've been battered by material nature, like we all have, the tendency is to want to just withdraw and just kind of put a guard up, you know, put a wall up and just keep people out, right? And people feel that, you know, when they come to the community or something, they can feel that wall. Nobody wants to deal with them, right? Just kind of put your head down, you know, oh crap, there's somebody, you know, I don't really want to deal with this person, right? Excuse my language, but we actually have to practice kripa. We have to be willing to deal with that harshness and that ugliness and that disturbance to our own life, and try to actually give them Krishna consciousness to the best that we can. Of course, by prasadam, holy name, and distributing books, you know, you could see when you do these things, you have to be willing to tolerate people very heavily, right? And similarly, if you want to engage devotees in service, or you want to somehow train devotees or something like that, you have to be willing to tolerate so many things. So there's no way to escape that suffering. We just have to understand that. There's nowhere you can go. There's nothing you can do. You have to deal with it by being greater than it, right? By being compassionate in the midst of it and willing to forgive and tolerate whatever difficulties are there. Does that make sense? So that's what Narada Muni is instructing here, kripaya bhuta jam dukham. And so we see the next one, daivam jahyat samadhina, that this, and Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, this is, we can counteract sufferings due to providence by meditation and trance. So we should understand what this daivam is basically, it is the... material, you see that material nature, as mentioned in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it's constantly going through cycles of devastation, isn't it? Krishna mentions there how, you know, at the end of every Brahman's day, the entire universe is, you know, at least from the three worlds down, Bhurbhuvasva, are completely annihilated, right? And at the end of Brahman's life, the entire universe is annihilated. But even within our practical experience, just here in this plane of existence, in this time, there's constantly these powerful forces of annihilation that arise and just steamroll everything. They overpower you. This is kind of like the main thing. There, as Prabhupada mentions in other places, the daiva, the klesha of daiva, it's basically you have earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, right? There's fires. Also he mentioned war, pestilence. And so when you're around these things, experiencing them, it's like this powerful wave of devastation that you can't resist. And it destroys everything. It may destroy your own life, right? And if it doesn't, it's going to destroy everything around you. Your home, all your possessions, your wife, your children. Everything is ripped away very horribly. And so the nature of material energy is these things arise occasionally, right? Now, Prabhupada's point here, and the point of Narada Muni, is that the only way you can counteract this, again, there's nothing you can do to adjust it materially. You have to raise your consciousness. You have to adjust your perspective. And as it says here, jahyat samadhina, you have to be in samadhi. You have to really just focus on Krishna, just absorb deeply in Krishna. As this point of war mentions here, I have a nice quote from Prabhupada. This is a letter written to Makkanlal Prabhu, who is now, of course, a sannyasi. And he asked Prabhupada, what do we do if there's a nuclear war? There could be bombs raining down on Los Angeles, right? In fact, recently I saw an article where the Chinese government, they posted, I guess, supposedly through their military into their press, maps of the United States saying, we have nuclear submarines in the Pacific Ocean and in the Arctic Ocean. They're beating their chest, right? We're very powerful. And everybody does this, right? And so they're showing, these are all the cities that we can destroy. And guess which one of them was also there, right? So, there's people pointing weapons at you right now, right? And they're waiting for the right moment. So Prabhupada has asked, what do we do when this powerful experience of devastation comes? Prabhupada says here, and this is kind of long, so bear with me. You have asked whether nuclear devastation on this planet would affect the Sankirtan movement. No. There's nothing that can stop the Sankirtan movement, because it is the will of God Himself, Lord Chaitanya, that His holy name be heard in every town and village. Neither can the demons devastate this planet independent of the will of Krishna. Nothing happens without His sanction. So part of this samadhi is to recognize that everything is going on by Krishna's power. Krishna's behind everything. There's no fearful situation where Krishna is not present. Rather, Krishna is present everywhere and in everything. Continuing, it says, if Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can save him. And if Krishna wants to save someone, no one can kill him. For our parts, we should just be determined to carry out our mission against all opposition, demons, nuclear war, whatever. The whole universe is finally subject to certain annihilation by the will of Krishna. But devotional service is eternal, and is the only certain way one can save himself from devastation. We can preach all over the world and that the only way to be saved from collective and individual devastation is to take to the chanting of Hare Krishna. In short, this material world is a very precarious place. Therefore, we should always chant Hare Krishna and seek Krishna's protection. So, this material world, you can't stop these things. There's going to be devastation. There's going to be destruction. Just take shelter of Krishna. Just meditate on Krishna. Absorb in Krishna. And try to see it from the higher perspective. Okay? Now, Prabhupada also mentions here an important point, which relates back to the Kripa, that he says here, people do not know that because of killing innocent animals, they themselves will have to suffer severe reactions from material nature. So, of course, Savasprabhu was mentioning, I think in the last class he gave, how there's billions of animals being killed every year, right, just in America alone. So, we can understand the reaction for this is going to be tremendous. There hasn't been a big war or anything like that, or pestilence for a while. It's just like, for example, in Southern California, it's understood that there's an earthquake coming, right? There hasn't been one for a while. There's tension building up under the ground. So in the same way, there's karmic tension building up under the surface. And it's only a matter of time until it releases. Not to be like, the sky is falling or something like that. But the point is that there's severe reactions for this sort of thing. And when you have a society that doesn't have this quality of compassion, that doesn't interact on this level of tolerance and forgiveness, right? Remember, we have to develop this quality of kripa in order to tolerate the various sufferings. When you have an entire group of people, a mass of people, that do not have kripa, that are not actually practicing developing that particular characteristic, then the society quickly becomes very cruel and heartless and cold and nasty, right? Brainless. And therefore, very quickly, one of the first things to suffer is the animals, right? The defenseless animals. They're just treated just as if they're just dead matter, right? They're treated horribly. And so the reaction for that onto that society itself is very severe in the form of war and pestilence. As Prabhupada says here, any country where people indulge in unnecessary killing of animals will have to suffer from wars and pestilence imposed by material nature. So how do we develop this compassion? Prabhupada mentions here, comparing one's own suffering to the suffering of others, therefore one should be kind to all living entities. So the way that we can develop this kripa is to actually be conscious of our own suffering and to understand that others are suffering in the same way. Everybody's suffering in this material world. Sometimes we're not conscious of that. Sometimes we're so absorbed in our own suffering that we don't think of anyone else. We don't care, right? Very hard-hearted, you know, who cares? You know, I've got my own problems, right? But the reality is if you look around, you'll see, oh my gosh, everybody's suffering. Everybody's got these problems. Wow, you know? And it may actually cause some change of heart that maybe I should actually be nice to people. You know, maybe I should actually try to help people. As was being mentioned, real nonviolence means to give others Krishna consciousness. If you actually don't, if you interact with others just on the bodily concept of life, you reinforce their material illusion and you add to their suffering. So therefore, just, you know, even if you just want to do the bare minimum of kripa, which is to not cause further suffering, then you have to actually be willing to identify yourself as a servant of Krishna and to interact with other living entities in that level of consciousness, right? Instead of thinking with the body, to actually identify, I'm not the body, I'm actually a servant of Krishna. Let me interact with the world from that perspective. And then you're not contributing, at least, to people's suffering. And if you're even more compassionate, you can very vigorously try to help others to attain Krishna consciousness, right? So, there's a couple more here, as it says here, Atmajam Yoga Viryena. So, the suffering of our own body and mind, as is being mentioned by Prabhupada here, it can be counteracted by the practice of Hatha Yoga and Pranayama and so forth. So, this is where, rather than discussing an adjustment of consciousness, is discussing a practical thing that you can do to try to minimize the suffering of that situation. Much of the suffering of our own body and mind is due to our own improper behavior, right? Improper eating, improper sleeping, right? And our lifestyle is not sattvic, you know? So therefore, it's being prescribed here by Narada Muni that one can practice Hatha Yoga and Pranayama and these various techniques which actually bring a balance to the body and mind. And therefore, the body and mind is in a nice position to render service to Krishna. Right? It's important, of course, to always see it in the proper perspective. We have to recognize that this body is an instrument for Krishna's service. And in taking care of that body, we can do these things, you know, for Krishna's pleasure. We don't want to take it up in an imbalanced way and then make it sort of the goal of our life, become distracted from Krishna consciousness and just absorbed in taking care of the body. And then mentioned, finally, it says, Nidram Sattva Nishevaya. So for the person in spiritual life who's trying to make advancement, sleep is considered something, somewhat of an enemy. It's something that you want to overcome. Right? For the materialist, sleep is like the end-all and be-all of life. It's the perfection of existence. You see? There's so many of these big mattress stores, and you look inside, and there's people just laying there, you know, like sea lions on a dock, you know, just rolling on each other practically, right? and you know, so for the conditioned soul, sleep is one of the essential experiences of happiness. But for the spiritualist, I understand it's a waste of time. Basically, you want to absorb your consciousness as much in Krishna. And, you know, unless you're very, very advanced and you're in a mystic yoga slumber, tendency is that you don't get much done when you're sleeping, right? So, there's not much service that you can do. So, therefore, it's advised that one try to overcome sleeping. And so, it's saying sattva nishevaya, it's by the development of sattva gun. So, the more that you develop the mode of goodness, the less sleep you need. You see, Prabhupada, of course, other great souls sleep very, very little because they're not simply sattvic, they're in shuddha sattva, you know, they're in pure goodness. So their sleeping is practically reduced to nil. And Prabhupada offers, again, some very practical advice on how to do this. He emphasizes, especially in regard to eating, one must control their eating. You know? For some reason, by Krishna's arrangement, I keep getting the verses that talk about eating, controlling your eating, right? He's trying to knock on my thick skull, you know? So when you eat in the mode of goodness, then you develop the mode of goodness. That's one of the very, in other words, Prabhupada's pointing out this is a very powerful and essential thing in developing the mode of goodness. You have to actually, it's not just philosophizing, you know, you have to actually get down and do something and be willing to be austere. And of course, in many places, Prabhupada discusses eating in the mode of goodness, in chapter 17 of Bhagavad Gita, of course. There's the emphasis there that eating is primarily for health. You should eat to have a strong body, to do service, to be helpful, to have a purified mind, right? It shouldn't be for sense gratification. The tendency is we take food in the mood of sense gratification. It's for our enjoyment, and we pursue it in various ways. That's not very good. We should actually see that food is sort of practical for using the body in Krishna's service, right? Also in the 11th canto, it mentions that one shouldn't over-endeavor, one shouldn't strive very hard to attain things for eating. The tendency is, you know, we have these big plans. He makes plans all day long, you know, how we're going to prepare this or gather these various things and make this for our sense gratification, right? People take tremendous effort. They'll send away to France for truffles, you know, $3,000 worth of truffles or something like that, right? So people make elaborate arrangements, but food in the mode of goodness is very, very simple. It's just whatever is easy to attain and it's sattvic, whatever is good for you, right? Prabhupada, of course, mentions milk products and grains and vegetables, right? Fruits. These things are all in the mode of goodness. And they should be offered to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. And they should be eaten in the mood of service to Krishna, meditation on Krishna, gratitude to Krishna, right? It's that absorption in Krishna while you're eating, which is essential as well. And so by doing this, gradually we will, and of course one shouldn't eat more than necessary. One should eat what's required to basically keep the body and soul together, or from another perspective, to keep yourself healthy for service. And in this way, gradually we develop the mode of goodness, and this mode of goodness becomes a springboard towards transcendence. Okay, and that's discussed in tomorrow's verse. So, once again, the translation is, by good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation and trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing hatha yoga, pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. So, are there any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu? Naikatma, Prabhu?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. You mentioned about sleep, that as one develops in the mode of goodness, less sleep is required. But we see that there's a lot of people out in the world, very successful businessmen or different types of people who sleep just a few hours a day. Devotees meet them out on Sankirtan all the time. There's all kinds of people who are in different professions and lifestyles. Does that mean that they're developing the mode of goodness? Or?
No, that's a different type of going without sleep. That's not what's being recommended. You can go like this to their eye and it's bloodshot, you know. And they've got like, you know, 10 ounces of caffeine and sugar pumping through their system, right? So that type of, you know, a person in the mode of passion can go without sleep temporarily. They can force themselves out of a desire for money or whatever it may be, sense gratification, to practically do anything. They take on any austerity if they're willing to, you know, they believe the gratification of the senses will be there. So that's temporary and it's also destructive. You know, it causes, as it mentions here, this process of yoga and pranayama keeps a very sattvic bodily and mental existence. So that actually is very destructive to the body and mind. You know, it leads to dukkham. Right? Activities in the mode of passion lead to misery. So they may be without sleep, but they're actually miserable, even while they're experiencing it. Even while they're going without sleep, they're miserable. And then in the future, the result of that will also be miserable. And not only that, the sense gratification that they're performing so much austerity to attain, that also leads to misery. Right? So what's being described here is a sattvic. It's basically you don't need it. You're perfectly happy and satisfied. Your consciousness is pure and awake and full of knowledge and pacified, peaceful. And there's no feeling of tiredness. There's no need for sleep. There's no hankering. There's no suffering there. You're so clean. Your consciousness is so clean that you don't need it. Right? It's not like a roller coaster ride. It's just you're perfectly stable and steady. And that's what we're looking for. It's not, the goal is not simply not to sleep. The goal is to be in a sattvic state of consciousness. And that's not even the goal. The goal is to actually use that as a foundation, then to focus on Krishna and lift ourselves even beyond that state of consciousness. Whereas this mode of passion one, that's not really good for anything. Is that okay? Mother Shampriya?
In the Bhagavad Gita, because it was spoken 5,000 years ago, it also mentions how milk is in the mode of goodness. But if we look today at the way that milk is produced and the horrendous atrocities that are brought against the mother cow to produce that milk, are we getting some kind of karma from that, or are we going to be implicated?
Well, my understanding, for example, devotees, are you referring specifically to devotees who are using that?
Yeah, especially devotees, because we really love Krishna and Krishna loves the cows. So we're more in a position of knowledge, and we also know what's going on because it's not so covered up like it was. In Prabhupada's time, people didn't know what was going on in the slaughterhouses, and it also wasn't so developed and so industrialized as it is now. And I think most of us, we know what goes on behind the scenes. So, you know, how are we implicated in that?
Okay. So I'd just like to mention something briefly, and then maybe we'll... perhaps different devotees in the audience may like to say something. So, of course, we're going to offer it to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. So if we're in a consciousness of devotion to Krishna, there's certainly no sinful reaction for that. You know, because even in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was doing so many, you know, he's actually, they're killing people. But of course, as quoted yesterday, mam anusmara yudhyacha, you know, not only was Arjuna fighting, but he's also remembering Krishna. He's offering the activity to Krishna. And therefore, in that state of consciousness, there's no sinful reaction. There's no negative thing. You're not bound by that. In fact, that's one of the major points of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was told, you know, ma shuchaha, do not fear. Right? Don't be afraid of this papa that you think is going to come upon you because you're doing it for me. So there's no question that if we're genuinely, simply, sincerely offering something to Krishna for his pleasure, there'll be any sinful reaction. Now, as far as other details about that, maybe if there's someone else who would like to discuss that, this principle of, you know, how devotees, what is our relationship of our use of milk and the fact that most of it comes from slaughterhouses. Yes, Maharaj, could you please comment on that?
Well, as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book about the Putana offered her breast milk, which was poisonous to Krishna, and she became a mother of Krishna in the spiritual world because she offered something to Krishna, although it wasn't sattvic. So Prabhupada mentions that even trees, when they offer their flowers to Krishna, when their flowers are offered, then even the tree gets benefited. So we can understand that if we want to benefit the cows, we should offer the milk of the cows to Krishna, and then they'll be benefited also. As far as Prabhupada wasn't aware of the slaughterhouse, what was going on there, devotees, no, Prabhupada was completely aware. If you listen to his lectures, he mentions it many times about the horrible existence of Kali Yuga, how they're slaughtering the cows. He would say it was unmentionable what was going on there. So he was perfectly aware of it still. He didn't tell us ever not to offer milk to Krishna because of the horrible things that are going on in the slaughterhouses. This is completely a new idea coming not from Prabhupada or from our acharyas, but from persons who have certain sentiments towards things.
Okay. Would anyone else like to add something?
Of course, I'd like to just add that I personally wouldn't eat or drink homogenized and pasteurized milk because it's very difficult to digest. So for health reasons, maybe. But on the spiritual platform, if we want to benefit the cows, that if we do have cow's milk, which is offerable to Krishna, then then the cow will be benefited. Otherwise, we're just neglecting, you know, what Prabhupada and Krishna has asked us to do.
Thank you, Maharaj. Archita Prabhu, you want to add something to that?
Thank you for a very nice presentation, Sachin. Your point about the consciousness in which you do things is the most important part. Because you can grow the most sattvic, organic produce, but if you don't offer it to Krishna, you're going to get reactions. Krishna himself says that. Yagashishtacha nakshanta mochate sarvaskilbhasat. Or, in our case, if it's found that you have to take some product, but which product is not contaminated in the market? See, everything we do, that's what Kali Yuga means. Everything you do, you're implicated in some kind of sinful reaction. Therefore, you have to do it in the right consciousness, or you will be implicated. If you buy your organic pears and you just go home and eat it without offering it to Krishna, you're going to be implicated in a sinful reaction. It's not about organic or inorganic or, you know, this or that. It's about your consciousness. So that's the main point that you made, and I really appreciate that. You have to be in the right consciousness in terms of eating, what you buy, how you offer it. Now, Prabhupada did push us to establish farms and become self-sufficient. Not just because things are contaminated outside, but because there's going to come a point in the near future where you won't be able to go to the market and buy anything. So if you're not prepared for that, you're going to be in great difficulty. So he was pushing us to do that. But in the absence of that, you know, the Sankirtan army has to go on, and the soldiers have to eat, the deities have to be offered, and so the main thing is the consciousness in which you do it, not whether it was, you know, raised on this form or that form or whatever. Wherever you get it from, if your consciousness is not right, Krishna's not going to accept it, or if you forget to offer it, that's not good.
Okay. I think we're probably about 5 minutes over time. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.